Hi, this is Dr. Bud Pierce. Welcome to Oregon Crossroads, where we talk about current topics with the emphasis always being about freedom and prosperity. We want to be as free as we can be, to live the lives we want to live, and as prosperous as we can be, so we can enjoy our lives. So today we're going to talk about healthcare, and we're going to shake things up a little bit. You can't get stuck in a rut. And it turns out that many of you are aware that clinics have been sold from one medical entity to Salem Health. And probably a lot of people don't understand what that's about or why it happened. And that's a local event that helps us understand what's happening to the healthcare delivery system. And then we obviously have the national politics. We got Medicare for all. We got single payer. We have all kinds of ideas splashing around. And I think this is a good time to talk about it in a practical way that is understandable. Because what we're really interested in political leadership are practical people with experience. They'll just use their common sense. And the public doesn't understand a lot of what's really going on behind the scenes. So I've actually been in medicine for 42 years. I have an interest not only in the politics of medicine, but how medicine works. We're owners of our own practice. It's a medium-sized business. So I'm going to talk, but a monologue is very boring. So what we want to do is to put me on the hot seat. So I'm going to be the interviewee. And I have my favorite person in the world, Dr. Selma Pierce, who's a dentist, my wife, and she's going to interview me and put me on the hot seat. So what I've told her is to be hard but fair. So we'll see what she can do. So again, we're going to kick this off. And I think that the initial thinking about this is that there's been a sale of medical clinics to Salem Health. So I'm going to throw that at her as a warm-up, and she can take it where she wants to go with it. But that's where we start. So Selma, okay, I'm all yours. You are in charge.
Actually, I wanted to ask you, I heard that Salem Health is building a new tower. What is all that about?
So it turns out, so on the backside of our hospital, the A building, when I came to Salem, there was the B building. That was the only hospital building 26 years ago. We now have the A tower, the new one, emergency, critical care, surgery. Then we have the old B tower. We have the C tower we're in right now, which is our practice and outpatient services, and the D, which is mother baby. It turns out that hospitals put their expansions on hold about 10 years ago with the Great Recession. And now they're finding that capacity they're fully at capacity, and they need more critical access beds. So they really need more access to emergency services and surgery and monitoring. So Salem Health is going to add, I believe, I haven't been in the planning for this, five floors onto the part of the hospital where the parking is now behind the current A tower. And I think it's a couple-year build-out. And it's, again, to provide those high-technology beds and high-technology services that medicine is moving toward for hospital services. Because, I'll just finish, and I know, don't be a monologue, but...
Yes.
The hospitals are turning into specialty centers with high-tech, and other services are being moved to the outpatient. So that's the drive to build new, build modern, and put technology.
So back in the 90s, a lot of hospitals had built out, and then they wound up with a lot of empty beds and unused wings. Is this a possibility with this new tower down the line?
There's always concern of overcapacity, but as you look at the baby boomers aging, the older population needs a lot of these high-tech services. And if you look, the number of beds are actually going to add. It's unlikely. In the past, they would build out big wards with the idea that you would have people hospitalized that frankly could be managed as outpatient basis. It doesn't look like it for these patients. These are high need, high technology. Centralized services are important, unlikely to be a problem.
So is it going to be big enough? There's talk about 60,000 new residents in the mid-Willamette Valley. Will that be enough, or how do you decide how big you should build?
We hope so. You decide based on modeling of needs and resources available. And so they've spent a lot of time. We have a very good hospital administration and planners here. I think they've got it right much more of the time than wrong. So I have good faith in their decision making.
Should it be a centralized program as they're doing now, or should we actually be building out more satellite areas? Because when everyone comes into Salem, going to the same spot, traffic, parking gets kind of tight. That makes it difficult for patients to get from where they are to the services.
from a user of services point of view, more facilities, more choices is desirable. We're a very big city for a one hospital town. There are some pluses about efficiencies and centralization and such. But frankly, from an economic model, when you have one of anything, it tends not to be optimal from a consumer services point of view, and certainly not optimal from an economic point of view. Because again, if you're the only provider of a service, you like to be there in the economics of it, but it's not optimal probably from a choice and a cost point of view.
So I also heard that Salem Hospital is purchasing some clinics around town. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So for a long time, the medical community has thought that it's important for medical doctors to be able to have private practices. And that really, that push began in the 80s and 90s. And it got increasingly difficult for physicians to own their practice because of some things that happened at the federal level. And what happened at the federal level was in the late 90s, a formula was put into place that we won't go into the details because it's a little bit much. But what it did practically was it froze reimbursement for physician owners of medical practices for 15 years in absolute dollars. So if you got $100 in 1998 for a service, you were getting $100 in 2013 for doing the same thing. No inflation escalator, nothing. And this is, again, a policy at the federal level. This is Medicare. And the Medicare rates control the Medicaid rates, so they stayed flat. And insurance pays doctors a multiple of Medicare. So let's say 1.5 times. So insurance would pay you $150 for the service, Medicare would pay you $100 for the service, and Medicaid might pay you $80, although it was better in our area, so around the Medicare rate. But everyone else got more. Everybody else got more. So but that freezing basically made it economically untenable for most physicians to own their practices anymore. And it's interesting, the hospitals didn't have that. So when a hospital buys, so practically speaking, these clinics, if the doctors own it, they get $100 for a service, a given service. If the hospital owns it, it's $150 to $200 for a service. Now, the doctors in town thought it was important to have that private practice option. So we were subsidizing those clinics to keep them open. And it was through the Oregon Health Plan contract that the local doctors were given control over by Dr. Kitzhaber in the 1990s and 2000s, when all the insurance companies fled the Oregon Health Plan market because they couldn't make any money. There was no access. So a program was created in pretty much every community where the local doctors agreed to take care of all the Oregon Health Plan patients for a certain budget. And if there's any overage in that budget, it stayed with the medical community, i.e. the doctors. And in this town and many others, the doctors use that to subsidize these medical clinics to keep them open because on their billing, they couldn't make enough money to stay open. Well, many people know that this year that the local doctors group did not get the Oregon Health Plan contract. It went to Pacific Source. So that support income is gone. So therefore, it can't run. It can't run. It's not financially viable. I talked to a doctor yesterday who said, she's retired. She said, Bud, 1 year I just worked on billing. And she sees all kinds of patients. And she said, and I agreed to spend 30 minutes with every patient. And that's because I think it's rushing to go faster. And my net income was $15,000. So that's reality. So the only way to make that happen is to subsidize it. So a doctor like that in our community might get $150,000 subsidy or something, $100,000 subsidy to keep the door, to add to their $15,000. Well, that's gone. So that's gone. Now, interestingly, a few things happen when you do this. So the hospital is going to buy these assets, and that's fair. Our hospital is a good hospital. But what really interesting is right away, more money flows into these practices. Because remember, when the doctor owns a practice, they get $100 for a service. An identical service, when the hospital owns it, that same service gets $150 to $200. And a academic university like OHSU for the identical service gets $400. So the first thing you notice is more money in. That's good for the providers. But interestingly, it gets more costly. The same service that the society was reimbursing at $100, they're now paying $150 to $200 for. And private medical insurance pays a multiple of the Medicare rate. So it's no longer $150 for $100, it's $300 for a $200 service. So the net effect is the doctors have a job. They can actually be paid the same as they were. There's more money in the system, but the reality is that society pays more. And so that's an interesting thing that people don't understand in this whole model of how healthcare is paid for. There's a lot of pieces that, frankly, people don't understand unless they're really into it.
Okay, so it sounds to me like it would be advantageous to the hospitals to own these doctor practices, because then, number one, they get more revenue. And the other question is, all right, where is this extra revenue coming from? Does that mean premiums will be going up for patients?
So what that means is Medicare pays more, and Medicare is paid for by taxpayers. That means we pay more. And Medicaid pays more generally, so that is paid for by taxpayers. And then the private insurance market is basically paid for by the employers. So there is under pressure. So yes, what that effectively does is it raises costs because the hospitals get a higher rate of reimbursement when they own outpatient services. And that came from a model in the old days where hospitals only did inpatient. Mm-hmm. And so they got more money because inpatient is more expensive than outpatient. Everyone agreed. But then when they bought the outpatient services, the laws got changed at the federal level. Lobbying is important. So they could carry some of that over into the outpatient services. But the doctors never got that. So that's why more and more of your doctors. And it's the same for procedures. When you do labs and procedures, some of that inpatient cost carries over to outpatient. So it's more expensive.
So they always say that Medicare is running out of money. So when they have to pay for these more expensive outpatient procedures, eventually somewhere the money has to come from.
You cut benefits, which is highly unlikely, or you raise taxes, which is highly likely. Oh, and the other thing you can do is there's always a part that the patient's responsible for, and probably society is going to say that the more wealthy seniors have to pay more. That's probably what.
But the basis is basically
more money.
More money coming from the taxpayers.
For the same.
So we're taking money from the working people to pay for the seniors?
We're taking money from young people mm-hmm. who are working and transferring it to older people who generally aren't working. It's a transfer of wealth that has hurt our young people immensely. And one of the things that we're the first generation, our parent generation is really the first generation. We're right behind baby boomers who are living a long time. And we've set ourselves up for certain benefits, and the money's not stored aside. It's coming out of ongoing taxes, like other things, like PERS and all these other things. There's a lot of promises for retirees. And if the money's not there, the current workers have to work for them. So you see much more poverty. Before Medicare and Social Security, a lot of poverty in the seniors. Well, there's robust programs for seniors. It's thinner for young people.
So now we're hearing on the national level a lot about Medicare for all. And that's also known as single payer. And to me, it seems to be based on some of the systems that we have seen in Europe or Canada. And everyone says, oh, isn't that great? Everything is covered. Everything, I don't have to pay for anything. However, I have also heard that there are some negatives about that, because I have heard in Europe, believe it or not, there is some rationing. And I do believe, I have heard properly that, for example, if you're 80 years old, you're too old for some of these procedures. What is the truth?
So what we want in society is number one, we want people to be as well as possible. So wellness, of course, is work as long and stay engaged in life as long as you can. Don't smoke cigarettes. Get some exercise. Don't eat too much. Don't get too heavy and eat good quality food. Don't abuse your body with drugs and alcohol. That's legitimate public policy that the government and our culture and our cultural leadership needs to take on. Because if we did that, we'd have a lot healthier people well into older age. And a lot of people have a lot of self-abusive behaviors that are very harsh on them and expensive for society to take care of. So that's where our government should go. In terms of delivery system, we want well-trained, motivated people that have the resources to do what we need when we get sick and to take care of us. And that's what you're talking about. In terms of payment, there's a whole bunch. We have probably a dozen people in this office trying to figure out how we get paid for the services that we're doing in our practice. And that's, again, very cumbersome. If you said you wanted to have one set of standards to get your money sent to you, we wouldn't probably be against that. Although again, that we're not talking about how we budget, and we're just saying one set of standards on how we get paid and how we submit our billing. That would be fine. Hard to imagine our government could execute that. They don't do services very well. That'd probably be contracted out to a private entity. That's one thing. The other thing, though, is when you talk about Medicare for All, you're talking about a very rigid system. Medicare is very rigid. I'll give you an example. If Medicare will say, we'll pay $5,000 for this, and then all of a sudden a new treatment comes along that costs $50 that's better, it takes 6 to 12 months for Medicare to accept that new technique into the system. So in the meantime, if you do the one that's low cost, you can't even get paid for it. You have to do the $5,000 one. Medicare is cumbersome. It sets up codes and billing and reimbursements for procedures based on bureaucrats. There's no flexibility. There's no negotiation. So the reality is that what Medicare does more than anything is that it does wrong is it misallocates resources. It tends to support the really high cost, high technology items at a good reimbursement, and some of the lower cost things that are very practical, it doesn't. Insurance companies are very much better at doing that. And if you look at the way things work in America, when you have one thing, one cable company, expensive, I don't care if it's private or public, you got one phone system, expensive. If you have one overarching healthcare delivery system, you basically have the VA. And the VA does some things good, but it's not it's not productivity, it's not innovation, and it's not low cost. It costs double or triple what expensive medical care costs. So if you're talking about a government system, the problem is it misallocates resources. The money doesn't go to the right place. It overpays for a lot, underpays for other things. And what you're going to end up with is a system that performs at a much lower level. And even with that, while some people have figured out how to get lots of money from Medicare and keep the doors open, a lot of other entities, there's not nearly enough money, and they'll just go broke and out of business. And so what you'll have then again is you'll lower the productivity of the workforce, the motivation, the innovation. And again, if you want to see Medicare for All and universal health care, go to a VA hospital and a VA clinic. And that's all you need to see. And they do some things wonderfully, but it's not very good. And so we don't want to go there.
So I also heard under the Medicare for All program that it's possible that the supplemental programs that, for example, what seniors pay for now, the price of that would go skyrocketing.
Well, you have MedAdvantage, which is insurance companies take the Medicare premium and add benefits and put in some controls over services and how services are delivered. And those have been wildly successful. There's a reason they're much harder to do in Oregon than in Washington, in California, New York, mostly because they get three times as much money per head than we get in Oregon. Again, a problem with the Medicare system, how they could pay one area three times as much as another for the same service, but that's government politics. So all those things would certainly be at risk. They would go away. They just flat go away. You're doing a great job here, but we got about 2 minutes.
All right.
Is there any wrap-up question for me in the last 2 minutes?
I didn't think about a wrap-up question. So what is your plan? Well, if you were to be in charge,
what can we do?
What kind of system suggest? How do we improve on our system?
Yes.
And what should we look for?
Government work like crazy and our culture on getting us more well, a purpose in life, something to do, usually work, encourage productive life, keep ratcheting down on cigarette smoking, terrible. Get our population healthier with exercise and movement, lack mobility, way too heavy. Focus on eliminating drug and alcohol abuse and helping people get away from that. That's culture, that's government. On the delivery system, we have to believe in economics. And the economics are multiple parts of the delivery system that are independent. Salem should have more than one hospital. Salem Health doesn't want that. I understand why. We should have more than one hospital to choose. We should have multiple options to seek medical care providers. And there needs to be a lot of price transparency. There's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes where the money's going that you don't know. And again, what I'll close with this is right now in the healthcare delivery system, there's a lot of happy people. Hospitals are generally happy. Health insurers are happy. Pharma's happy. Device makers are happy. Nursing homes are happy. They're all happy. Who's unhappy? Doctors. And patients. And that's the problem. That's the fundamental problem. Believe in your basic economics. Believe that we need to know what things cost. We need to have choice. And we need to have, again, a motivated delivery system that will take care of us. They will. And we need to get healthier. And that's the true answer. When you listen to the debates and you know about this, you just laugh. I'm not blaming one side or the other, all of them. Just laugh. It's not what they're saying. Well, I think that'll do it. I think we've used up all our allotted time. Thanks for coming to Oregon Crossroads, and I hope you've learned something today, and have a great day.